coming up on NHL Fantasy on Ice. Reaction to all the trends down the stretch. John Tortorella's squad fizzles when it counts. The Yotes could be done howling, and the Avs are on the brink of clinching. Plus, the biggest busts and the most delightful surprises of the season. It's NHL Fantasy on Ice.
What's going on, everybody? Pete and Rob recording this episode on Wednesday morning, final week of the regular season. What's going on, Robbie?
What's up, Pete? Yeah, fantasy may be over. It ended better for some than others. So good. Congratulations to those that won the championship or are still in it. But yeah, we've got a lot on tap. We can cover a lot of storylines with Montreal, Columbus, Carolina, and then the playoffs are going to start so soon. I cannot wait.
And we're doing something a little different this week. We got one episode during the week, and then over the weekend, dropping on Sunday or Monday. We're recording it on Sunday. Playoff previews. So we're looking at the Eastern Conference in one episode and the Western Conference in another. Can't wait to get that thing rolling.
I can't wait to wake up on Sunday morning, Pete. My alarm's going to go off early. The producer, Bob's going to be with us in the studio here. Dave Satriano is going to be in here. We're going to break down all the matchups. We're going to give some picks away, say who we like in the series. I'm really excited for this time of year. Best time of year, in my opinion.
Rare Sunday appearance for all of us. I don't think any of us have been in on a Sunday in quite a few months, so yeah, we're looking forward to it.
The voice may be a little deeper on Sunday, but we'll cross that bridge.
So we already got two matchups set, solidified, signed, sealed, delivered. We can't wait to get to them. Sharks and Vegas is probably the most compelling. We've talked about it for a few episodes now, but The Sharks are absolutely brutal right now, and they're hinging everything on this potential return of Erik Karlsson for Game 1, but this team can't get out of its own way, and they don't even look like they have the motive to win a game against Vegas right now. What
no,
do you think?
They're shot. I mean, everything is going poorly for them, but we've been saying this for months. Their goaltending is the problem, and if they can't score 4 goals a game, they can't win a hockey game. So as soon as the scoring drops off, they don't have the defensive stability to do that. They get down in a 1-0 hole against a team like Vegas with Marc-Andre Fleury in net. There's no way you feel good about them coming back in a game.
And they give up a deflating goal. I mean, Tanner Pearson had a monster game against them on Tuesday. You can't make this stuff up. And Vancouver Canucks have nothing to play for. They have everything to play for, at least to get their mojo back, but they've failed to do so. I think they've won one game in their past 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Sharks are in real rough shape right now. I know Brent Burns is in the Norris conversation. I know that he is 79 points in 80 games, but he is not helping this team right now, nor is anybody else.
No, I wouldn't even put his name in the Norris consideration just because of how much a defensive liability he is. Mark Giordano, on the other hand, defensive stalwart. We can talk all day about that. But let's get to some of the crazy final matchups here. Montreal, huge win against the Lightning that started Eddie Pasquale. Not sure where you stand on saying that one, but massive win for the Habs.
Yeah, so Vasilevsky started Monday night. Louis Domingue is banged up. I mean, this is not – I mean, if they were to ever lose Andrei Vasilevsky, they'd – cannot fall back on anybody else, whether it's Domingue or Pasquale, however you say his name. He didn't stand tall in that game. And Montreal had everything to play for, so you got to give them credit for that.
I will say, though, Pasquale did play really well. I mean, he was making some kick-out saves that I thought for a second, because his jersey is 80, I thought it said it was vast. I thought it was 88 at times. I mean, he looked solid. His positioning was good, but I give the credit to the Habs here. Even though Tampa was on a second of a back-to-back, I think Montreal, with the Bell Center crowd behind them, poutine flowing in the stands, I really think that they just stepped up. Claude Julien ran a tight ship. They got the job done. Max Domi, hats off for the fourth goal.
Yeah, that goal by Domi was electric. And, of course, Tampa Bay didn't have Vasilevsky. They didn't have Victor Hedman, who's probably not going to play again until Game 1. But they were even expressing a little potential doubt that Victor Hedman would be ready for Game 1, so that's not a good sign.
Well, that would be a massive blow, but until that time, I'm still taking my victory lap around the studio. Follow us on NHL Fantasy, our Instagram account. I called that Max Domi goal, and holy smokes, what a thing of beauty. Breakaway 5-hole at the Bell Center. It doesn't get any better of that, and I can only hope that Montreal wins its final 2 games. One is against Washington on Thursday, and then Saturday they play the Leafs. Holy smokes. I mean, to me, let's just hypothetically play this one out. If they beat Washington, how bad is Toronto going to want to win that game to knock them out of the playoff race?
Toronto's in a weird place right now. They win a big one against the Islanders, and then they just are not looking like themselves, not looking like the team we hoped they would be. But, yeah, they're going to have that extra motivation. I mean, Montreal right now is going to need to win their last two games and maybe get some help because they don't have the row advantage over Columbus. Columbus will get to them now, I guess. Columbus, what a disaster. I mean, they're playing an elite opponent. But talk about showing a pulse or lacking a pulse after that that first fluky goal. I mean, this is Tortorella all over again.
Totally flat soda, John Tortorella. Nothing to get up for that one. I will say, though, in Columbus's defense, when that first fluky goal went in, off the backboards, bounced on top of the net, hit Bobrovsky in the shoulder, and wound up in the back of the net. It's hard to come back from that, especially against the big, bad Bruins. But hey, you got a taste of what can happen to the Columbus Blue Jackets. That was a playoff-like game, and they had absolutely no effort to show for it.
I liked what I saw from the Bruins, just speaking of the Bruins moving forward into the playoffs. So David Krejci, multiple assists, Jake DeBrusk, multi-point game. That line's going to – Marcus Johansson scored. I mean, these are the guys that are going to – if they're going to be powered to the Cup Final or even to just knock off the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're going to need those secondary scorers lighting it up like they did against Columbus.
Brad Marchand hit 100 points. Not a big deal there. Wow, big-time player in Boston. But, yeah, I do like this Bruins team. If they have that depth scoring, for sure, they're going to be hard to beat. But I think it's Columbus. I think that this John Tortorella situation coming down to the final two games, they have a back-to-back set against very easy opponents. They're at the Rangers and then at the Senators. The only reason I don't like these two games, I have a trap feeling. Number one, it's a back-to-back road trip. Those are kind of awkward at this time of year. You want to be at home. You want to be gearing up for a first-round series. They've got to go on the road, and they've got to play two teams that have nothing to play for, which concerns me. Those teams are going to circle these on the calendar and say, we have a chance to say, we have an Eastern Conference foe. We're going to knock them out of the playoffs.
And the Rangers have been giving top teams fits all year, right? They beat the Blues the other day when they had nothing to play for. Ottawa's been kind of ramping it up offensively since they got Shabbat back. So these are not pushover games. You're going to have to come equipped. You're going to have to come disciplined, prepared mentally and physically to take care of business because they are still in the driver's seat, like we said, even after that brutal loss. They win these next two, and they will be in the playoffs.
And let's think about the revenge storylines. Matt Duchene back in Ottawa. I don't know. It's kind of awkward.
Ottawa has a lot to play for in that game for their dignity because they don't have a lot of talent on that team. But a lot of those guys saw what transpired with Carlson, saw what transpired with Stone and Duchene, and they can really stick it to their former teammates.
That's right. They could. And that will be very exciting to watch. Carolina, on the other hand, they absolutely took care of business with flying colors against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think if you listen to Justin Williams, their captain, in the pregame skate when he met with the media, he sounded like they were sure they were going to win that game. Sure enough, his first goal, albeit a little fluky, he was the one that got them on the board and took care of business there.
Yeah, it was a fluky goal, but hey, it's Justin Williams. It's the big game player that we've known him to be. How about Jordan Staal? I mean, has Jordan Staal been in the playoffs since he left the Pittsburgh Penguins? I don't think so. So, yeah, he had a multi-point game as well. Jordan Staal could really be a difference maker in the first round. I mean, they probably don't even have a prayer if they match up against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But the way that those veteran guys are helping to will that team into the playoffs. And also Peter Mrazek, I saw, is 11-3 in his past 14 games. I mean, talk about stepping it up at the right time. That's not even a timeshare anymore. A lot of teams have questions. Who's going to start game one? There's no question for me with Carolina.
Boy, if you picked those two goalies up, Mrazek and McElhinney, in November, and you rode them out the rest of the season, you were probably one of the ones that didn't think about it. You wouldn't even have to have wasted a draft pick on either one of those guys, and you got two of the top 10 finishers at the position. I love that.
Now, shifting to the West, how about Colorado and that effort? Falling behind 2-0 against the Edmonton Oilers at home, then and just a beautiful goal on the zone entry by Nathan MacKinnon, and then everything, the scale just tipped in the other direction. Colorado is rolling right now, and that Western Conference playoff race with the Coyotes. They just created some separation last night.
They did, and Darcy Kuemper got hurt. I just want to say, though, Carolina's remaining schedule, home against New Jersey Thursday, at Philadelphia Saturday. Again, maybe trap game territory, but I feel good about Carolina to get in the playoffs. So
they'll get it done against the Devils at home, and that might solidify the playoff spot right then and there. And maybe we'll be talking to John Isner at some point. I know he wants to jump on the podcast if and when the Hurricanes clinch. He thought I might have jinxed them
because it was
a little iffy for a while.
These two games are everything. So we'll get maybe Isner on one way or the other, whether it's a rage-filled podcast or a happy one, TBD. But yeah, Colorado, that was exciting to see. Two-goal hole, come back, drop six, scored a touchdown, not a big deal there. That team, there's nothing much more to say about them than they have a great top line. They are getting some depth scoring. Is it going to translate to the playoffs? Probably not, likelihood, but you know, it is what it is. It's a decent storyline.
If you look at the potential matchup, though, which goaltending situation do you like more if, let's say, they match up against the Calgary Flames? To me, it's not even close. I mean, there are a lot of teams right now that I think could pull the upset in the first round, but the more I think about that matchup, the Flames don't have, other than James Neal, who has playoff experience on the Calgary Flames?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not too worried about them from a team standpoint, but it would be that Colorado line with Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen coming back, Gabe Landeskog stepping up. Those guys are hard to play against, and you saw it against Nashville last season too. I think it went six games, and they were tight games. It wasn't like it was a total blowout series. I think the X factor for the Colorado Avalanche, Cale Makar. I heard that he could come up, be a factor. He was the best player in college hockey. Look at his stats. You're going to be blown away. You're going to think you're misreading it. If he comes in, gets a little bit of depth scoring on defense there for them, that could be the pusher in the series.
And he's playing for UMass, who made the Frozen Four, so that's kind of on delay. We'll see if they get the exit. Maybe he could join the playoff series or something to that effect. But for now, I think at the very least, goaltending advantage for Colorado, and then the top lines could offset. I mean, Calgary has a dominant top line as well. But one interesting thing, how about Alexander Kerfoot? Two-goal game in the game against Edmonton. He's got a six-game point streak and playing a lot with Nathan MacKinnon, first power play and top line more often than not lately.
Anybody playing with MacKinnon's going to do stuff. Kerfoot, we saw it last year too, streaky player, hot and cold, six games with a point, six games without a point, bank on that.
I mean, I just think that possibly splitting up those guys, giving yourself a little more depth, gives them a shot in hell against the Calgary Flames. I mean, if you're just one line team in the playoffs, any line could get shut down and then you're out of luck. But just seeing a little sense of depth is at least encouraging to me. And again, remember this Avalanche team. I mean, they're going to get probably the number one or number two pick in the draft as well. So a very, high hopes for this team moving forward.
That does not hurt things. My upset favorite in the West right now would be Dallas. They played a well-played effort against the Philadelphia Flyers, beat them 6-2. Anton Hudobin had a massive game, .941 save percentage in that one. Matt Zuccarello came back out of nowhere, played almost 19 minutes, left the game early, but I read it was for precautionary reasons, so hopefully nothing there again. But man, this Dallas team, they've got 5 goals per game with Zuccarello in the lineup. It's small sample size, but that's big time.
Yeah, Zuccarello had an assist on that nice Ezza Lindell goal, a pretty primary assist. And yeah, Zuccarello, we've been talking about it. I mean, Jamie Benn has like 52 points this year. We expected more out of him. If he's playing on a line with Zuccarello, his production could spike in the playoffs. One of the lowest team shooting percentages in the league for Dallas. They're getting the elite goaltending either way from Hudobin or Bishop, who's expected to play one of their final two games over the weekend. Dallas plays at Chicago on Friday and home against Minnesota. They already locked up a playoff berth, but just getting the reps again for Ben Bishop could be key.
Yeah, they're kind of meaningless games too, right? Because they're pigeonholed in the standing, so they can't get any higher really and have it be of any consequence, good or bad. And then same thing, they can't really get any lower either. The buffer between them and Colorado is, I think, too great to make up at this point. So, you know, it's not a lot for Dallas on these games. That's the only reason I'd consider fading them in DFS. But Alexander Radulov, holy smokes, 4 points against the Flyers. Montreal, what were you doing last offseason?
Remember when they signed Radulov? I mean, you had a feeling he would have a great first year. But
or
then
two off seasons ago, excuse me.
Then
what were you
were
doing?
Worried about his sustainability and his longevity with the contract. But he has been even better this year than he was last year, and he's made up for those struggles for Jamie Benn and even Tyler Seguin's slow start to the year. And Radulov has missed time. He's really close to a point per game on the season and is a fantasy guy to consider probably in the top 50 moving forward.
And how about Ezra Lindell's between-the-legs goal right in front of the crease? I know it was against Cam Talbot, but that was a total highlight-worthy reel.
That's funny. I saw Cam Talbot. So Cam Talbot was starting Tuesday, then Brian Elliott on Thursday, and Carter Hart on Saturday. So if we can't have one last laugh about the Philadelphia Flyers this year, they're spreading out their three-man goalie rotation over the final three games of the season.
That is classic Flyers. You cannot make this stuff up. It doesn't matter who's behind the bench. This is a total circus. But let's ping-pong some players for the final couple of games here. The first team I'm looking at, this is going to come out of left field, the Detroit Red Wings, Pete.
How good has Tyler Bertuzzi been? I mean, this is a line that could stay together next year and moving forward. I mean, it's Mantha, it's Bertuzzi, and Dylan Larkin. You've been hyping him up all year, but these guys are reaping the benefits of exposure to him. Tyler Bertuzzi, I think I saw first Red Wings player in history to have four straight three-point games.
What? That's a
four straight three-point games.
And they've had
games.
Some decent players, if memory serves me correct.
Absolutely. I can't believe that any of those other guys have never done that.
That's wild. And Mantha had 14 points in his past six games. 7 goals, 7 assists, 4 on the power play.
And they have, I mean, forget it. Let's not even talk about Jack Hughes yet. But, I mean, some of these other guys that have emerged, right? Taro Hirose playing on a line with Andreas Athanasiou. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have Philip Zadina coming in the mix next year. Mm-hmm. This is a team to not take lightly in fantasy moving forward, even if they have issues on the back end. Jimmy Howard's coming back for another year, but the Detroit Red Wings have a very potent offense moving forward.
And Jimmy Howard, honestly, he was decent in fantasy this season. He had, 25-plus wins with a .910 save percentage? That gets the job done for a number
That's
two
not
or three
bad
goalie.
At all. So in the Central Division, the top two teams right now, Nashville and Winnipeg, I have been down on these teams lately, but one glimmer of hope, at least for Nashville, I mean, P.K. Subban's playing out of his mind right now with the playoffs only days away.
He scored a great goal against the Sabres, and it's a player in fantasy that pretty much under-delivered on expectations. I had him as a top 10 fantasy defenseman. I'll stand true on that. His talent alone is top 5. But he did not play that way this year. If that player of his caliber, I guess it was because of injuries, I have to preface by saying that, but if he's rounding into form right now, that is a difference maker in a big-time series in the West against the Winnipeg Jets.
Two guys on Nashville I'm still waiting to really show up. I mean, Mikael Granlund has no points in his past 9 games. I mean, the lineup placement hasn't been consistent, but I expected a big impact from this guy. He's played in the playoffs before and has opened eyes with some sick goals in the playoffs for the Minnesota Wild in his career. And then, of course, Wayne Simmonds. I mean, you think these guys are going to step it up for the playoffs?
No.
If not, Nashville could
they're
be out
gonna,
in round
they're,
one.
They're not going to do it. These guys aren't built for the playoffs. They're going to get thrown around into the boards by the big bad Jets. And I just got a text message on my phone. Bro, you called the Habs winning Domi getting a goal last night. LMAO. So shout out to Alex. Thank you for texting me that and recognizing real recognize real.
I still don't understand, to be honest, how the Habs are in it this late. I'm like mystified by
it is
that.
It's surprising,
but I give them a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. I mean, Domi's had so much better of a season than we could have ever expected,
and they've done this without good centers. They've done this with, like, they remember they tried to put Drew in there, which that was a complete disaster. Domi was playing center at one point. Now on his line I saw Nate Thompson was playing. You can't make this stuff up, Pete. I saw Nate Thompson was playing center on Max Domi's line for a while. I'm thinking Domi had 71 or plus points this season. Put a good center on that line, he's going to be a consistent 70-point player.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the Habs do at center. Can Kokkaniemi, who's shown some glimpses this year, can he be a top 6 asset moving forward? Remains to be seen, but I like their chances. And let's just stop and look at the scene in Montreal last night, beating the top-ranked Lightning, even with some of the guys they had absent. I mean, this is great for hockey to see the Bell Center buzzing again. I know you were talking to your buddy in the preseason who was a little dejected entering the season, and how things have changed in a couple of months. Pretty amazing.
That being said, if they miss the playoffs, you know, no one's going to even remember how close they were. They were just going to say the Habs didn't make the playoffs. So these final two games are absolutely everything. And with that in mind, let's talk about it. Since we're at the end of the season, maybe some biggest disappointments so far. I think in fantasy, for me, right off the bat, I'm turning to Philadelphia. I'm looking at two players on the blue line. Number one, Ivan Provorov. What the heck happened there? Number two, Shane Gostisbehere. Don't have to go much further than the same pairing. Those guys were going in the 75 to 85 range almost every single draft I was a part of. Complete waste of a pick. They were droppable within 2 weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, Gostisbehere, just a forgettable season, and he's kind of gone that route, right? His rookie season was amazing, close to a point per game, then sophomore slump, then bounced back last year, and now falling back this year. So what do you consider him moving forward? A total enigma. I would wait on him until the late round.
I was thinking about that yesterday. I'm like, where do I have him ranked for next year? I was looking because I just released my rankings for next year already. We did the way too early rankings this week. Check it out on NHL.com/fantasy. You'll find everything there. But yeah, I literally looked at it and I'm thinking, I'm probably going to take his average of this season and use it with the average of last season too, and meet somewhere in between, because there is just no way that he can produce the way that he produced that one season and then have this kind of year too. There's not that much discrepancy.
He's a weird one though, because I don't see him meeting in the middle. I see him either breaking out again or underachieving, like we've seen, because he is dependent on the power play, and the Philadelphia power play had an off year.
But then what about Provorov? Because he was tied for first at the position in goals the previous season, and now this season really struggled to score. And you look at Dougie Hamilton, he did it two seasons in a row. He has 19 goals now, a defenseman that could score 20 goals. Since January 1st, I think he leads the league at the position in goals. So talk about a discrepancy between a bust of a player in fantasy versus one guy that Dougie Hamilton, he didn't do a lot for the first 3 months, but now he's one of the top-ranked players at the position over the last three.
Well, there are two guys that are underserved on the power play. Dougie Hamilton, I think he got a power play point last night. That was only his seventh power play point of the season. Mm-hmm. Justin Falkman's on the top unit. He's been on the second unit with Svechnikov. Maybe they eventually bump him up. And same goes for Provorov. I mean, we thought the second power play unit would be formidable for Philly. It hasn't been. I mean, even the top unit has had its problems.
That's the thing with Carolina, though. Put Dougie Hamilton on the top unit. I'm tired of this Justin Falk thing. Like, we know what he is. We've all seen it. We've seen this for the last six seasons now. Just put Hamilton. You need a rocket shot like that on the top unit. I don't care if Falk's a better passer. Hamilton has 20 goals. You cannot put a 20-goal scoring defenseman on the second power play unit. That's ridiculous.
That's baffling for sure. And yeah, I think that Carolina could maybe limited its ceiling. Maybe they would have been comfortably in the playoffs at this point had they made that decision.
How many goals would he have?
Too much loyalty 25, to Justin Falk.
27,
maybe.
28 for Dougie Hamilton.
It's true. He probably would have led the league in defenseman goals had he been on the first power play unit, but that's something for next year now. So other busts. I mean, you did the D-men. I did the forward rankings for next season. The ones that come to mind, Patrick Laine barely hit 30 goals this year after a hot start. Jamie Benn, I mentioned, low 50s in points. That's not cutting it for a top 10, top 15 overall draft pick. And Anze Kopitar, I mean, the Kings had a big win against the Coyotes, maybe ruined their season last night. But the season for the LA Kings, Drew Doughty, minus 35. Anze Kopitar had 90-something points last year. Mm-hmm. Nowhere, not even in the vicinity of anything like that this year.
Oh, man, that team just absolutely crumbled. And we all saw it in the first 2 weeks. But the problem with those big-name players in fantasy, how can you actually go to your roster and click drop on a player like that? You can't mentally get over that hurdle and do it. So a lot of people, I heard it every week on Twitter, should I drop Kopitar? And everyone's like, no, don't do it. You can't drop a player like that. Well, you waited too long, and he ruined your season. You could have had a hot waiver wire ad. You could have had one available spot on your roster to make that happen. But it's the same thing with Erik Karlsson and this injury thing. He's been out over a month now. I didn't drop him because I just can't drop a name value player like that.
Yeah, you can't stomach it. And the same goes to Jonathan Quick. I mean, Jonathan Quick gave up 7 goals the other day. I mean, you probably should have cut the cord on him on January 1st. But I know a lot of people have still hung on to him, hoping that even down the stretch, garbage time, he would start to give you some efficiency that you've come to expect from him. But he's one of the biggest goalie disappointments for sure. Bobrovsky was, but he's strung off like 7 shutouts since February. So
yeah, he made
that's
up for
changed
that.
A little bit.
He totally made up for that. I will go back to Jamie Benn and say, at least in his defense, he covers categories. So you're not getting a complete bust of a player there.
Right.
But Patrick Laine is a complete bust of a player there. When you look at his preseason draft ranking, it was top 10. He's a player that should have scored close to 50 goals almost automatically. He did not do that. I don't know what happened there, what the situation was. He's also in a contract year. He'll be an RFA this summer, so that's kind of a disappointment from his standpoint too. But that being said, Pete, I don't think we can really judge his season on the regular season. I think this is a player we judge in the postseason. If he has 10 goals in 18 games, I don't care that he let me down in fantasy. I'm back up stock high top 15 player for next season if he has that kind of performance.
And the same applies to Ben. I mean, Ben, like you mentioned, has the category coverage advantage over Laine, and really, whether he's playing, we don't know if like Zuccarello is going to be back next year. We don't know if he's going to be on the top line, second line. He's kind of been all over the place this year, but I still like Jamie Benn moving forward into the playoffs. I think he could be, he's a big name player, but his bounce back in the first round of the playoffs is the X factor for the Dallas Stars, to be frank.
And biggest surprise in fantasy this season, I guess we'll end the program on this. Mine has to be Elias Lindholm. I will say this, though. It's not really a surprise to me. I drafted him. I drafted this player.
Very late.
Very late, but still, I drafted. It's not like I was going to take him, you know, in the first 5 rounds. I would have been crazy. But that being said, really commendable performance from him this season to put up 70-plus with great exposure to Monahan and Gaudreau. And let me tell you firsthand, if you had Monahan or you had Gaudreau with Lindholm, you really ran away in your week-to-week matchups this season.
My biggest surprise is probably the Islanders' goaltending. I mean, they've combined for 10 shutouts. One has 928, one has 926. Robin Lehner, Thomas Greiss, under Barry Trotz, better than we could have ever imagined. A couple other guys that have really helped teams down the stretch. How about that Florida Panthers top line, right? Barkov, Huberdeau, Dadonov. I mean, that's got to be a line that you prioritize heading into next year.
And one thing that you brought up about the Islanders tandem that reminds me is the best draft strategy for next year is to handcuff goalies like that in later rounds. Get your Lehner with your Greiss if they're back next season for the Islanders. Get your Ben Bishop early. Get your Anton Hudobin late in drafts. That is a slam dunk strategy. Same thing, you can even double down on that. Frederick Anderson with Garrett Sparks in a later round. That is very smart drafting. It is worth the late round pick. It really is.
Yeah, you have that insurance policy. I mean, right, Varlamov had some great starts to the season. It was terrible in the middle, and Grubauer was great at the end. I mean, McElhinney was good all along, really, when he was healthy, but Mrazek dominant at the end. So a lot of these tandems, with the exception of probably Florida, have really paid fantasy dividends.
That's
Florida's
right.
been a disaster in the crease this
but
year.
But Varlamov is the best point. If you drafted Varlamov and trusted that he was going to be the standalone starter, guess what? Someone else drafted Grubauer thinking that he was going to be the standalone starter. And which player would you rather have?
I mean, Philip Grubauer is the he's going to be this team's goalie for at least the next 2 years per his contract. Varlamov is going to be looking for a new team in the offseason. So there are so many storylines we're going to get to after the playoffs. But of course, tune in, drop in this Monday. We're recording it on Sunday. NHL Fantasy on Ice playoff preview. We're going to have an Eastern Conference episode and a Western Conference episode, and we'll be in bright and early on Sunday to get that job done.
I cannot wait for that. So for myself, at NHL Reese on Twitter, for Pete at NHL Jensen, give us a follow, or at NHL Fantasy for the both of us. Send us some last-minute questions, who you like in DFS, who to start, who to sit, whatever you've got.
Subscribe, rate, review. Hit us up with any last-minute questions if you're still in your fantasy championship round, still playing DFS. We know you're going to be playing DFS and making your picks for your playoff pools, and we'll get to all that this weekend. So once again, for Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, talk to you later in the week. Thanks so much for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.